BBC Radio Berkshire. Howard
Hughes. Time for technology news now. Fevzi Turkalp is the man they call the gadget detective because, frankly, he is. And as Carly Simon once sang, nobody does it better. How are you, Fevzi?
And you're so vain.
You probably think this song is about you, don't you?
Oh, God, yes.
It's all right. We're not going to start bandying about Carly Simon song titles. It's far too early for that, and I can't remember any more to be... what else? Oh, Carly Simon. No, let's not even go there. The Carter family lived next door for more than 40 years. Technology news now, Fevzi. We've got to get a move on here, and it's me who's holding you back. Can we talk very briefly, if this is possible, about the big news story this week to do with people's Wi-Fi routers and how most of them, it seems, may be hackable?
Yeah, so this is sufficiently important. I thought what we could do, if you're agreeable, is drop the gadget of the week this week and deal with this because it's more important, frankly.
That will be great. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So when we connect any of our devices via Wi-Fi, the way that we've always been told to do that securely is to make sure that we use something called WPA2, which is the most current and most secure standard, and that's the communication between, say, your tablet or your smartphone and your Wi-Fi router, and that can be at home or in a cafe or anywhere else.
And is that the most modern form of encryption? I know there was WEP, WEP.
There was WEP, which was held to be insecure because it was cracked. And then there was WPA and there was WPA2. So WPA2 is what's recommended and is now essentially standard. What's been found is an intrinsic vulnerability, a weakness, a fault in the coding of WPA2, or actually a fault in the standard, which means potentially that every Wi-Fi link could be listened in on. So people could find that, you know, their data, their passwords and everything could be grabbed. It is serious. I mean, one thing to say about it is that the vulnerability is local. Someone has to be within your Wi-Fi range to do it to you. But, you know, given the ubiquity of it, a bad actor could easily decide to snoop on their neighbours.
And if you think about the urban areas that some of us live in, I mean, look, I live in a complex of flats. I can probably see where I am. Even on my smartphone, I can pick up probably 20 different routers.
Yeah. So let's explain. So the companies that make devices are scrambling to fix this. Apple devices are currently not fixed. That fix will probably come in iOS 11.1, which I would imagine will probably come now within the next few days or a week or two at most, I hope. Microsoft have sorted out already Windows 7, Windows 8, 8.1 and 10. This only applies if you're connecting via Wi-Fi. If you're connecting via a cable, you haven't got a problem. If you're connecting via your cellular network, you know, your 4G allowance, that's not a problem either. So Windows 7, 8, 8.1, 10 already covered. Mac OS 10.13.1 already covered. Unfortunately, Android, I think, is one of the bigger problems. They will update... Google will update Android on November the 6th. However...
That's not good enough, is it?
Well, yes, but here is the weakness. So when Apple update, they roll it out to all their customers. But when Google update Android, because, say, Samsung and LG and all the others do their version of each Android operating system, we're reliant upon them. So Samsung, for example, have rolled out a patch for their current flagships, but to date not for their older phones, and it's not clear whether they will do it for their older phones. And this is an issue, you know.
Boy.
But you see, it's like Chinese whispers. Google have to update it, and then Samsung and other manufacturers of Android smartphones then have to say, yeah, okay, now we'll do our version of it.
That's the problem with Android, isn't it? Because Android has so many different versions which are specific to Sony and all the other makers.
And they may never get them, and particularly, look here, Samsung have done it for their current flagships, but not for some of their older phones. Why not?
This is a complicated story. First of all, this sounds like a major risk. In the meantime, if we are not covered, what can we do apart from turning everything off?
Okay, so if you're in your home and you can run a cable, do that. So if you've got a laptop, run a cable if you can. If you're on a mobile phone, try and use your mobile phone data insofar as your contract gives you spare data. Some of us have data that we never use. Or usually better to use it. And don't forget, even without this problem, if you're sitting on a public Wi-Fi, let's say in a cafe, it's incredibly easy to have all your data sniffed and copied by the guy or the woman at the next table.
4G data is relatively cheap now. I've got a deal that gives me 10 gigs worth for £18 a month. It's a SIM-only deal, and that's not an uncommon deal, and that's a lot of data.
Oh, I've seen 20 gig for substantially less than £20
a month. But unless you're constantly watching television, that is going to be more than enough for you in a month.
It's more than enough for most users. And the other thing is, consider using a virtual private network, or also known as a VPN. So, particularly over a Wi-Fi link, and in fact, anyway, because what that does is it effectively creates a tunnel between you and the service, the internet service that you're accessing. So, although others on your network might see data flowing back and forth, they can't actually see what that data is. VPNs were traditionally used by business people to contact their own office computers, as it were, but now they're more commonly used. So a good VPN is good advice, even without this problem.
It's all terribly worrying. We need to keep our listener, I think, updated about this, because it's a serious story. If you just got a minute or so, this was in the news yesterday, Fevzi, just remind us of the story about mobile phone companies, including Berkshire's own Vodafone, but other companies as well, charging people for handsets they've already paid for.
Yeah, so Citizens Advice Bureau have looked into it, and they've called out Vodafone, EE and Three, notably not O2, who do it differently and therefore show it can be done differently. With Vodafone, EE and Three, when you have a contract, you agree to pay a certain amount a month for a minimum contract period, typically these days 2 years. That single amount actually is broken down into installments, repaying the cost of the phone, effectively a higher purchase agreement hidden within the contract, and then the cost of the service, the minutes and the data and the text messages. Now, with the exception of O2, Vodafone, EE and Three do not separate out those costs. So that's one thing. You're not really sure what you're paying for what. That should be separated just as a matter of principle. Furthermore, if you do nothing at the end of your contract term, be it 18 months or 2 years, you will continue to pay the same amount, which sounds like a great deal because it hasn't gone up. However, by paying the same amount, it means you're continuing to pay an amount which is equivalent to an installment on a higher purchase agreement that's already been paid for. You've already paid for the phone, and you continue to pay an extra £20, £30, £40 a month depending
right.
on your
so
phone.
So the companies have basically said, or they were saying in the news that I read yesterday here on this radio station, that their terms are fair.
Well, their terms are legal in that they tell people this is what you'll pay every month for a minimum of this many months, and if you do nothing, then the contract will roll and become a periodic contract, and you will continue to pay this amount. So you are told up front. But really, first of all, as I said, it should be separated out. Yeah, you should know what it is you're paying for. And you wouldn't expect to get a restaurant bill without it, you know, saying it was this much for this and this much for the drinks. And, you know, you expect it to be broken down, at least at the beginning, so you know what you're paying for. Secondly, I think that at the end of the contract term, if you do nothing, then you're monthly payments should drop to reflect the fact that you've paid off the phone.
Okay, so very quickly, what do you think will now happen?
I think that the mobile phone companies will continue to get away with this for as long as they can, and only if we continue
we
to kick up a fuss about it. Yeah,
well, but unfortunately, bad publicity.
But they rely upon the fact it's like energy prices, that people don't switch, they don't make diary notes. What we should do is make a diary note that 2 or 3 weeks before the end of our contract, we start looking. If we can afford to, and I know it's not possible for everybody, and I appreciate that, but in almost all cases, it is cheaper to buy the handset separately and then get a SIM-only deal.
Which is exactly what I do. We're out of time, Fevzi. If people want to ask you a question about that or anything else, how do they contact you?
Come and say hello to me on Twitter. Follow me at Gadget Detective.
Fevzi, thank you. Two important topics. We'll do a Gadget of the Week next week. Thank you for that. Have a great week, Fevzi.
Cheers.